complete. What I'm going to say this morning could be somewhat controversial for some. And you know how people are. Some people will only give you one shot or one swing at something before they won't listen to you anymore. So I wanted to have everything in these notes, even if we didn't necessarily talk about it or look at all of it. Okay, so that's my thinking there. So let's get right into the introduction. Again, this is lesson 150, the Reims New Testament, assessing its influence upon the King James. So, introduction. This week marks our sixth study on the 1582 Reims New Testament. Thus far, we have considered the following points regarding this important and controversial edition. We looked at, in lesson 145 and 146, we looked at understanding its aims and origins. There, we looked at Queen Elizabeth, Catholicism, and the Bible. And then we also looked at the Reims New Testament, what saith the preface, to try to understand what they were after there. Then in lessons 147 and 148, we looked at assessing the text. And under that, we looked at the Wycliffe-Reims connection. We looked at Latinisms, dark phrases where they were hard to be understood, fashionable words, Catholic renderings or Catholic translations, Catholic annotations, and the Reims and Tyndale, the dirty little secret. Okay, we talked about that. And last week in lesson 149, we talked about the Protestant reaction and the Martin Fulk controversy. And so we looked at the Protestant reaction, the controversy between Gregory Martin and William Fulk, and then we looked at how we discussed briefly the Reims influence on the King James. Okay. So in lessons 145 and 146, we reviewed our findings from lesson 89 about the placement of the Reims New Testament in the corrupt stream of transmission by advocates of the two streams of Bible's paradigm. While the Reims is clearly a Roman Catholic Bible, it contains many verses and readings that are omitted from the critical text and modern versions. So I've been very clear with you the whole time about distinguishing between the text and the translation. All right? The text would be what verses are included versus what verses or parts of verses are excluded. And the translation would be, well, how is it being rendered from Latin into English? All right? Page 2. In this lesson, we want to consider some of the latest research on the connection between the Reims New Testament and the King James Bible. And again, I'm talking about this right here from Vance. This thing is hot off the press. The text of the King James Bible, chapter 4, is on the Reims New Testament and the Authorized Version. This literally came out in March of this year. So there's a lot of stuff in there that we're going to be talking about. So assessing the influence of the Reims upon the King James is going to be basically the topic here for today. So it has long been recognized by those outside of the King James only movement that the Reims New Testament did impact the translational choices of the King James translators. Now, that's because the King James only movement has by and large accepted the two streams of Bible's model of transmission, which puts the Reims as wholly bad and evil, and therefore no one's ever really looked at it. Okay? So it's people outside of the King James only movement who have looked at the Reims and studied it and made contextual comparisons between it and the King James. As I noted last week in lesson 149, Dr. Lawrence M. Vance recently released chapter 4, the Reims New Testament, the Authorized Version, of his larger work, The Text of the King James Bible. Under a statement reading, quote, historians of the English Bible generally make pronouncements about the reliance of the King James translators on the Reims New Testament, Vance offers 17 citations from various authors commenting on the Reims-King James connection. Many of the quotations presented are from authors we have been following in this class. So if you look at the list, you'll find quotes from Ward S. Allen, David Norton, Blackford Condit, Charles Butterworth, B.F. Westcott, and Alfred Pollard. So we've looked at a lot of those writings in the past to get to this point. All right. Time and space will not allow me to reproduce all 17 of Vance's citations in this lesson. That said, please consider the following examples from the pens of Charles C. Butterworth and David Norton. So I've just picked two to look at that are emblematic of all 17 of them. They're all saying similar things. They're not saying identical things, obviously, but they're all saying somewhat similar things. So we don't need to look at all of them. We're just going to look at two as examples. We'll look at Butterworth and Norton, okay? So this first quote on page 2, this is coming from Butterworth, okay? Quote, Coming now to our particular concern, there is no doubt that the Reims New Testament exercised some influence on the choice of words used in the King James Bible. It is clear also that the Reims translators were influenced in turn by the earlier English editions, especially, it would appear, by the Geneva and the Latin English Testament, which Nicholson printed for Coverdale in 1538. So we talked about that already, right? That was the dirty little secret, how these earlier versions were used by Gregory Martin and the Catholics, even though they're saying they're bad and heretical, etc. Okay, so here's Butterworth reiterating that point. Occasional similarity of the Reims version to that of the old Wycliffe Bible is probably due to their common source, the Vulgate Latin. But there are instances where the Reims New Testament reads differently from all the preceding versions, and yet has been followed later by similar readings in the King James Bible, indicating that the translators of the 1611 by no means ignored the work that was done in 1582. Generally, the effect of the Reimish version was to enlarge the vocabulary that was available to the translators of the authorized version. So that's saying it's making available more types of words to pick from to use. Okay, it's enlarging their vocabulary from which they could draw. Okay, not that they didn't know these words independent of the Reims, but the Reims was there for them to look at, obviously. It is likely that the Reims New Testament had its greatest effect on the authorized version in the epistles. But there are traces of it elsewhere as well. The King James translators had to pick and choose among its offerings, and they rejected more than they accepted on the whole. For instance, in the 21st chapter of Revelation, verse 2, they adopted the word adorn from the Reims instead of trimmed or garnished as in earlier versions, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Now, I'm sure you guys know that. You know that verse about the heavenly Jerusalem, right? Prepared as a... So they picked adorned. The King James translators picked adorned instead of what the bishops in the Geneva had, which would have been trimmed or garnished. So they're picking the word there that the Reims used, all right? Nevertheless, in spite of its shortcomings, the Reims New Testament must be conceded a place in the lineage of the King James Bible, and the verdict of Mr. A.W. Pollard in his Records of the English Bible, that needs to be in italics, Sylvia, where it says Records of the English Bible. He says, along with Tyndall, top page 3, along with Tyndall, Coverdale, Whittingham, and Parker, the exiled Jesuit Gregory Martin must thus be recognized as one of the builders of the version of the Bible, which after three centuries is still scarcely disturbed, is still in scarcely disturbed possession of the affections of the English people. Now, that's an interesting statement. Butterworth wrote this book, I think, if I'm right, in 1934. Let me just check that. That's a statement that goes then to the reliability of some other things that I've said to you guys in the past about when this transition from the King James to modern versions happened. 1941, he said that. So that's right at the beginning on the verge of American involvement in World War II. Okay. So now let's look at the next quote is from Norton. From all their enmity, the two sides, so we're on page, those of you that are following on the internet, we're on page 3. For all their enmity, the two sides drew on each other's scholarship, so Reims, as a translation, is part of the tradition established by Tyndall. In their turn, the King James Bible translators, I think, drew on words or phrases from Reims when it suited them. It, too, was a draft of sorts. Even when translating badly, Reims could still suggest the occasional word to the King James Bible translators. Occasionally, it had a colloquial vigor that the King James Bible drew on, but Reims' prime contribution to the King James was an added sprinkle of Latinate vocabulary in the New Testament, though none of it is new to Protestant translators. Now, I want to remind you about this picture right here from last week. Okay, this picture right here from last week, this is the interlinear that William Fulk published in 1589 that had the Bishop's Bible on the right-hand column here in italics, which was the base text of the King James that the translators were revising, and parallel columns right next to the Reims New Testament. Now, we talked about this last time, right? So it would have been very easy for them, looking at the bishops, to compare what words the Reims had right next to it in parallel columns. So what the two authors, Butterworth and Norton, are saying that we just read is that the major contribution of the Reims to the King James was the occasional word, that Latinate word that is going to be moved over into the King James Bible from the Reims. Okay, so is everybody with me so far? So look at the next point. Butterworth and Norton both provide examples to substantiate their claims. Regarding Hebrews 11, 24 through 26, Butterworth presents the following documentation, okay, the following documentation along with accompanying statement, okay? So, this is Coverdale, this is the Geneva Bible, here's the Reims, and here's the King James, okay? So notice, here is where the Reims have afflicted. The King James puts what? Affliction. Where Coverdale had punished, and the Geneva Bible had adversary or adversity, they have, so the King James is getting this word choice, and evidently from where?
Reims.
From the Reims. Okay? So I've underlined and read there in your notes where those are in common with each other. Okay, so if you look at that verse in the King James Bible, you're going to see the word affliction. That is a form of the word afflicted that was used by the Reims translators here, as opposed to earlier words that were used, which were punish and adversity. Does everybody see what I'm saying? So here's a case where the word afflicted is, or affliction is coming into the King James Bible, arguably from where? From the Reims, because all the other ones before that had some form of these two words, and it's just, and I went through and I checked this out just to make sure that what he was saying is correct, and the Reims is the first one to use a form of afflicted, and then the King James uses affliction as it's translating in Hebrews chapter 11 there. So it's pretty clear that that word choice is probably coming from where? So go to page 4, there's another one in verse 26 of Hebrews 11. Here you see something similar, where Coverdale and the Geneva Bible use the word, both use the word rebuke. The Reims use the word reproach, spells it even differently from the King James, and then the King James is using the word what? Reproach. So here's an example of, and by the way, if you go back over here, you can see, would it have been very easy for them to make that comparison using this edition? Because they're right there, right next to each other in parallel columns, right? So if they prefer, in their translational work, if they prefer the word reproach as opposed to rebuke, is there a Bible on the table that reads that way that they could use to pick from? So even though the Reims New Testament is not listed in Rule 14 as one of the ones that they could draw from, there's no doubt that they are still looking at it, and I will show you that beyond doubt here as we continue to go through here. But you can see here, is there a word borrowing now in the King James from what the Reims had in those two verses? Okay? Does everybody see what I'm saying there? Any questions? So look at the quote now underneath that. The two words in this short passage, affliction and reproach, evidently came to the hands of the King James translators by way of the Reims New Testament. So here's an example of where the Reims is using a word that the King James Bible is choosing to use differently from what the other previous translations had. That would be Tyndale, Coverdale, Matthews, you know, the Great Bible, the Geneva Bible, the Bishop's Bible, etc., right? So here's a word that's used in the Reims that's coming now into the King James. Let's look at another example here. Dr. Norton offers the following documentation from the book of Romans. Quote, the following words in Romans follow Reims. You should probably get your Bible out for this. Go to Romans 1. And by the way, I also have here, you could check this, I also have brought with me my copy of the New Testament Octapla, which has all of these in it, so you can easily make comparisons here. So I've showed you this before, but if you've never seen it, you've got Tyndale, the Great Bible, the Geneva Bible, the Bishop's Bible, the Reims, the King James, and then the AV and the RSV right here on facing pages, right? So you can see the readings here for all of these right here on one page. So it's not hard for me to take this for the New Testament and compare Reams versus King James versus bishops versus the other ones to double check the work that is being presented and make sure that it's correct. Also, you can do the same thing using the internet for free. If you go to this website right here, which is, we gotta wait for it to load, studybible.info, where you can select from any one of these translations down here at the bottom, and you can see you've got all of the early modern English ones from Wycliffe to Reams as options for you to look at. The only thing I'll caution you on is sometimes this website is using more recent editions of things and not necessarily the first edition. So there are a couple things. So I was able to double check here and here with what those guys said there to make sure that what the information that I was presenting was accurate. Does that make sense? Okay, let's look at Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, verse 1. Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God. So we could go look at that. I'm not going to do this for all of them, okay? I just want you to see what I'm talking about here. So I'll go Romans. And also, this will help kind of show you how to use it. You just type in whatever reference you want. So we're going to go with Romans 1:1. And we want this to show up, let's just say, in Tyndale. So we'll select Tyndale. And it's not giving me the right verse. That's perfect. No, it's not. I want Romans 1:1. So there we have it. Okay? Notice what it says. Paul, the servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, put apart to preach the gospel of God. See, put apart to preach the gospel of God. Yours says what? Separated. The word choice separated came from the Reams. Everyone else had some form of put apart. So they make the choice to shorten that down and say separated, and that reading came, that wording choice came from the Reams. Back to the list. Okay? We also have one at, and this is me double checking, you have one at Impenitent. So let me go back here. You have one at Impenitent in Romans 2:5. The problem with that is when I double checked, that word was also in Coverdale. So that one doesn't really fit because it was also in Coverdale. Approvest, Romans 2 verse 18. That one is given, that word is provided by the Reams. Remission in Romans chapter 3 verse 25 is provided by the Reams. Glory in Romans 5:3 is a Reams word. Commendeth in Romans 5:8, but God commendeth his love toward us. That is a Reams word. Is everybody with me? Let's just look at Romans 5:8 here in Tyndale so you can see what I'm talking about. Romans 5:8. Here's Tyndale. But God setteth out his love that he hath to us. So the King James says, but God commendeth his love toward us. The word commendeth is coming from where? It's coming from the Reams. It's a word choice provided by the Reams. Concupiscence in Romans 7:8. But that's also, Norton made a mistake here. Concupiscence is also in Tyndale, Matthew's Great Genevan Bishop, so he didn't check enough sources on that one. Romans 8:18, revealed. That's coming from the Reams. Expectation in Romans chapter 8, verse 19 is coming from the Reams. Conformed in Romans 8:29. Emulation in Romans 11:14. Concluded in Romans 11:32. Conformed in Romans 12:2. So, be not conformed to this world, right? Real famous reading. Let's look at that one in Tyndale. We go to Romans 12:2 just real quick. And fashion not yourselves like unto this world. The King James says, and be not conformed to this what? The word conformed is coming into the King James from where? From the Reams, okay? And then we have the word contribution in Romans 15:26. So, look, regardless of what anybody wants to say, regardless of what any King James defender wants to say, did the King James translators utilize a Reams New Testament when doing their translational work? Seems to be no doubt when you look at word usage choices. Okay? So, if you look at the next point in the notes. So folks, let me just say, this may be an inconvenient truth to some people. But we have to tell the truth. We can't just say stuff because we like it and not accurately represent what happens, okay? The bracket additions I added to Norton's quote accent a point made by Dr. Vance in the text of the King James Bible, quote, "Sometimes historians of the English Bible provide a list of words and phrases that the King James translators apparently took from the Reams New Testament, but sometimes the list provided is inflated." Like the one we just went through, right? There were, most of them were correct, but there were two or three that they didn't check enough spots on, okay? But sometimes the list provided is inflated. And then I inserted the bracket here. Vance goes on to quote Westcott's a general history view of the history of the English Bible. We need to check that title. That doesn't sound right to me, Sylvia. As an example of such an inflated list. Like Norton, Westcott's list also incorrectly includes impenitent, concupiscence, as well as revealed from the Geneva margin, consent, propitiation, grace, and instant from the bishop's Bible. So you gotta be careful. When you're reading this stuff, because I know you're all gonna run out and get all these books and read all this stuff. I can just see all the anticipation on your faces to go and do that. But what I'm saying is, if you're gonna do this, you have to check everything to know, because sometimes well-intended people are not checking everywhere that they need to check. You follow what I'm saying? Okay? So, additional evidence that the King James translators were aware of the Reams New Testament is furnished by the preface to the Authorized Version, the translators to the reader, quote. So this is quoting the preface. Lastly, we have on one side avoided scrupulously of the Puritans who leave the old ecclesiastical words and betake them to other, as when they put washing for baptism and congregation instead of church. So, are the King James translators going to shy away from using the word baptism and church just because some people might think they're too Roman Catholic? They're not going to do that. So are they going to, you've read your King James Bible enough that they use the word baptism in church all the time. Okay? As also on the other side, we have shunned the obscurity of the papists in their azines, tunique, rationale, holocaust, pericope. Yes, is that how you say that? Parapuse, Posk, and a number of such like, whereof their late translation is full. Now, how do they know when they're saying, they're talking there in that sentence about the Catholic's late translation that's full of these words that they are intentionally not using, right? How would they know that those words were in the Catholic's Bible unless they were aware of the Catholic's Bible and had read the Catholic's Bible? So there's no way you can convince me, based upon objective factual information, that the King James translators were not aware of the Catholic Bible. They clearly were. They tell you they were right here in the preface when they discuss the word choices that they made. Okay? And that of purpose to darken the sentence that since they must needs translate the Bible, yet by the learning thereof, it may be kept from being understood. So they're saying by using these words, they're actually continuing to keep the Bible from being understood because nobody really knows what these words are. Now, did we not talk about that already? Where they use weird words and stuff? Okay? So they clearly have awareness of the Catholic's Bible. But we desire that the scriptures may speak like itself, as in the language of Canaan, that it may be understood even by the very vulgar. Now, the vulgar there doesn't mean, you know, guys who cuss and swear. Vulgar means common what? It means common man. Top page 5. The words enzymes, tunic, ratnel, or breastplate, holocaust, whatever that other one is, and Pasch mentioned in the preface are all found in the Douay-Rheims Bible, like tunic and rationale, only occurring in the Douay Old Testament. Okay? So, folks, is there any doubt that the King James translators are aware of the Rheims Bible? There's no doubt. They're saying, we didn't use these words like the Catholics did, because we wanted people to actually understand what it said. Does everybody see that? So what is our evidence now? We have the wording choices. We have the preface. Let's look at another line of evidence. John Boyce's notes of the translator's general meaning to prepare the final revision of the King James explicitly record a reference to the reading of the Rheims text and margin in Colossians chapter 2, verse 8. Colossians chapter 2, and that's a mistake. That should say verse 18. In Colossians chapter 2, verse 18. Now, here, this is a facsimile reprint of Boyce's notes. So here's chapter 2. This is chapter 2 starts up here. Let me show you. So here's where the Colossians starts. And then you see here, chapter 2, verse 1. You come down here to verse 18. And you can see this word right here. This is the word for what? Rheims. All right? So when Ward Allen produced his book, he also gave this in typeset so that it could be easily read. So here it is. This is the same information. And here we have chapter 2, verse what? Verse 18, and does it explicitly mention the Rheims?
Yeah.
So is Boyce aware of how the Rheims read in Colossians chapter 2, verse 18? Yes or yes?
Yes.
So we need to add now the notes of Boyce. Any questions so far? So look, folks, this is an inconvenient truth to a lot of King James advocates, because they've relegated the Rheims to the corrupt stream as though it is totally and wholly unrelated to the King James Bible. But when you look at the evidence, you have the word choice evidence like we just looked at, you have the evidence from the preface, and you have the evidence from the notes of a translator, that were they aware of and were they looking at the Rheims? Now, the Old Testament, the Douay Old Testament, came out too late to affect the translation. But it did not come out too late for Miles Smith, who wrote the preface, to have looked at it, and therefore included the two words in the list that were only in the Douay Old Testament. You following that? I mean, it's like, imagine you write a book, and there's a period of time, I know this from having written books now, there's a period of time between when you're done and you turn in the manuscript and when they're actually ready to print, right? Well, what happens essentially is they turn in whatever their final draft was of the biblical text. Meanwhile, Miles Smith goes over here to write the preface, and while he's over here writing the preface, does the Douay Bible come out? And in between the time when they turned in, when they finished the draft of the Bible and the writing of the preface and the publication of the whole edition with the Bible and the preface, the Douay Bible came out, the Old Testament portion, and Miles Smith looked at it and included two words in the preface that are only found where? In the Douay Bible, in the Douay Bible Old Testament. So there's no doubt in my mind that they are aware of the Rheims, and are they utilizing the Rheims as well as everything else they can get their hands on. Okay? So, the definitive work on the relation between the Rheims New Testament and the King James Bible is the 1902 publication of James G. Carleton titled The Part of the Rheims in the Making of the English Bible. Chapter 2, which comments on the analytical section of the work, begins with the following paragraph, quote, The position of the version of the Rheims as a liberal contender to the storehouse of the English Bible has been frequently recognized by scholars, notably in the preface to the Revised New Testament of 1881, and in several works, lists more or less accurate of some of the more important words which were adopted by King James's translators at the suggestion of the Rheims have been given. But no attempt has been hitherto made to furnish an exhaustive account of the extent to which the latter version has been indebted to the earlier. An account which in order to be complete must take into consideration not only vocabulary, but also the structure of sentences, grammatical distinction, and other points of greater or minor importance in which the translation of Rheims have left traces of its influence on the Bible of the English-speaking peoples. Notice he's writing this in 1902, and he's talking about the King James Bible as though it is the Bible of the English-speaking world. Right? That's because it was. It was the common English Bible. It was the Bible everybody was reading, even after the Revised Version came out. Okay? Now, as the following quotations attest, Carleton argued that the Rheims New Testament heavily impacted the King James translators. Quote, as might be expected, the translation, as derived from the Vulgate, abounds in Latin words, many of which were afterwards taken by the Authorized Version as the annexed tables bear witness. Now, I've already showed you that. I've already showed you the King James Bible using Latinate words from the Rheims Bible. We did it in the book of Romans, and I showed you the example from the book of Hebrews. Okay, look at the next quote. If one were to assess the degree of obligation due from the former to the latter, so that would be the Rheims to the King James, it might, I think, fairly be said that while the translation of 1611, in its general framework and language, is essentially the daughter of the Bishop's Bible, which in turn had inherited the nature and lineaments of the noble line of English versions issuing from the patent stock of Tyndale's, yet with respect to distinctive touches which the Authorized New Testament has derived from their earlier translations, her debt to the Roman Catholic Rheims is hardly inferior to her debt to the Puritan Geneva. So what's he saying? He's saying that the structure, the framework, the skeletal structure of the King James Bible is in the Tyndale line of readings, right? But are there the occasional touches that are coming into the King James from the Rheims? Everybody following that? And then thirdly in this quote he says, in the final place, one cannot but be struck by the large number of words which have come into the Authorized Version from the Vulgate through the medium of the Rheims New Testament. The partiality that Rheims openly avowed in their preface for the close reproduction of the language of the Vulgate, which in its extreme manifestation called forth the just censure of royal translators, has nevertheless left its broad mark upon the latter version. So in other words, were there times where they preferred the way the Rheims said something compared to other versions? We've already looked at four or five examples here earlier, okay? Carleton's evaluation of the Rheims' impact on the King James is summarized by his 13 headings. So he looked at the Vulgate Latin influence, number two, English in the place of Latin words, number three, modernizations, number four, archaisms, number five, improvements, number six, changes for the worse, number seven, partial. No. Is that right?
Participial.
Construction introduced, number eight, literal renderings, number nine, concise renderings, number 10, changes in order of words, number 11, familiar words and phrases, number 12, less notable words, 13, suggestions only taken. Three tables follow the 13 headings. Table one, the first column contains all of the passages in which the Rheims and Authorized Version presenting either identical or similar renderings differ from the earlier versions, The second column gives the renderings, gives the rendering or renderings of the earlier versions. Now, we're going to stop there. The bottom line is here, did this Carlton guy do an exhaustive collation of the Reams and the King James to determine to what extent the King James was influenced by the Reams New Testament? All right? So, we need to look at what he did here. So, bottom of page 7. Bottom of page 7. Hang on. Carlton describes his method of procedure adopted as follows. The plan I have pursued in this investigation has been as follows. I have in the first place compared the authorized version designated A in the tables with the version which, according to the instruction given to the translators and followed by them, formed its basis, viz. The bishops. When any difference, even the slightest, appeared, I then consulted the Reams. If I found A and R, or authorized and Reams, in agreement, I proceeded to examine the earlier versions, the Geneva, Whittingham's, which is his New Testament, Matthew's, Cramer, or the Great Bible, Coverdale, and Tyndale. In case none of these exhibited the reading in common, A and R, and common to A and R, authorized in Reams, I have assumed that authorized has borrowed from the Reams. I have inserted the joint reading in the first column of the table, of table one, while in the second column, for comparison's sake, I have set down the reading or readings of earlier versions. Wherever the readings of A and R were similar but not identical, I have given both readings in the first column. So, although Carlton's work appears to be definitive, Vance advises the following caution, quote, although Carlton does acknowledge that the Reamish version owes to Coverdale's Testament many of those readings, which it afterward transmitted to the great translation of 1611, his attitude parallels that of the aforementioned AC, that's right, his attitude parallels that of the aforementioned AC Southern. It is, of course, possible that in respect of some of these renderings, the translators of the authorized version may have arrived at their final choice of words and expression quite independently of any reference to the Reams version of the scriptural text. Now, we have to acknowledge, could they have come to some of this without looking at the Reams, possibly?
Yeah.
But do we have evidence to suggest that they were looking at the Reams? So therefore, it is just as equally as possible that in these instances where they agree, where the Reams agrees with the King James New Testament, it is just as possible and probably more likely that they're making a specific choice because they prefer the way it's worded where? In the Reams. Okay? All right. A second problem with Carlton's work is that he includes similar renderings along with identical renderings in his table. So that's so here's Vance's kind of pointing out some difficulties or shortcomings. And then there's a third shortcoming there on page 8 that you might identify with Carlton. And it's really long, and we're not going to read all of it. And it basically says he didn't necessarily compare all of the editions. So does the second edition of the bishops differ from the first edition of the bishops? Yes. So, we don't know for sure which edition Carlton made the comparison, right? Do we know there were at least three major revisions of the Geneva Bible? Do we know there were three major editions of the Tyndale Bible, right? We know there were two editions of the Great Bible. So, in other words, in order to really be absolutely dead on accurate, would you have to compare every printing of every one of these Bibles? And Carlton did not go to that level of depth. Okay? Is everybody following me?
Yep.
So go to top page 9. So that's my summary of that whole quote there. Okay? So, despite these problems, Vance believes that Carlton's work remains, quote, an important book concerning the influence of the Reams New Testament on the text of the King James Bible. Vance goes on to provide the following listing of clear examples or the Authorized Version and the Reams New Testament read one way, and all the earlier versions referenced by Carleton read another. So here's the table. Okay, so we've got an example here from Matthew, and we've got an example here from 2 Corinthians. So this column is showing you where the Reams and the King James read the same. And this column is showing you what all the earlier versions had. Alright? Now, we obviously don't have time to look up all of these examples, but I have double checked all of them to make sure that what Vance is saying is correct, right? So you have word substitutions or choices, translational decisions that the King James translators are making that agree with the Reams in all of these instances. And here we're just looking at two different books, one of the Gospels and one of the Epistles, of where you see these types of changes being made. Okay? So should we look at a few of these or not? Let's go to Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8, verse 4. Matthew chapter 8, verse 4. And Jesus saith unto him, See thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. Everybody else, besides Reams and King James, had what?
Witness.
So there's a change. All right, let's look at one here. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. So all of these are instances where the King James is agreeing with the Reams in a word choice against the previous versions. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 7. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 7. So the contrarywise, we ought rather to forgive him and comfort him, lest perhaps such an one should be swallowed up over much sorrow. Okay? So Reams and King James agree here with the word swallowed up by much what? Sorrow, as opposed to swallowed up by much what? Heaviness. So everyone else earlier had heaviness. The King James agrees with the Reams there in the word choice of what? Sorrow. Now again, you can take this list and you can go through the rest of these on your own. But there are a bunch more examples there. Okay? Any questions?
I understand the connection between the use of the Reams, but I'm not seeing a whole lot of instances where there's a real difference as opposed to just a preference in the way it reads.
We're coming to some more potentially inconsequential things. All right. So yeah, a lot of these you could just say are different ways of saying the same one,
right.
The same thing, right? However, the specific word choice is clearly not coming from Tyndall, Coverdale, Great Bible, Geneva Bible, or Bishop's Bible. It's coming from where? A reading that the Reams had. Bottom of page 9. In 89, lesson 89 and 145, we noted that the Catholic Reams New Testament of 1582 is always placed in the stream of corrupt Bibles, along with modern versions such as the NIV, New American Standard, ESV, and New King James. The following portion of a meme is very popular on Facebook and other social media websites. After downloading a PDF copy of the original Reams New Testament, I checked to see if the 16 verses listed on the meme were omitted. My investigation revealed that all 16 verses that are missing from the modern versions were present in the Reams New Testament of 1582. So the meme I'm talking about is this one right here. I've seen it many times in many places on Facebook. Vance concurs with my assessment. As the following citation will attest, please note that I have retained Vance's formatting throughout the following quotation. He says, the original Reams New Testament actually reads closer to the King James Bible than modern English versions when it comes to omissions. Most modern versions omit the following 16 verses from the New Testament that are found in the Authorized Version and the Reams. So all of these verses here, there are 18 verses listed here on page 10 and 11 in this category. All 18 of these verses that are omitted from the NIV, ESV, and modern versions, they are all in the Reams and they are all in the King James. Okay, so go to page 11.
The Reams is not considered a modern version, is it?
No.
Okay.
So I'm down here. Whoops. So, some modern versions also omit Matthew 9:34. So I'm on this part right here. Matthew 9:34, Matthew 12:47, Matthew 16:3, Matthew 21:44, and Luke 22:20, 43, 44, Luke 24:12, and Luke 24:40. Does everybody know where I'm at?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But all these appear in the Authorized Version and the Reams as well. So in the case of all 18 of the ones that I actually listed, plus the additional ones there in the text that Vance is identifying, do the King James and the Reams agree with each other that these verses should be in the New Testament? Is everybody with me so far? In addition to the verses in the preceding list that are in the Reams New Testament and King James Version, but omitted from modern versions, we should also note these additional textual variants. Number one, the long ending of Mark. Mark 16, verses 9 through 20. And two, the woman taken in adultery, John 7:53 through 8:11. These major textual variants are present in both the Reams and the King James New Testaments, while their authenticity is questioned in the critical text and modern versions. In other words, they want to do what?
Omit them.
Okay? Is everybody with me? Look at the next. So that's 18 passages. Probably if you want to include the others, it's more than 18. Okay? That are 18 instances at a minimum where modern versions omit the verses, but the Reams agrees with the King James that the verses are what? Authentic. Is everybody with me?
What reasoning do they give for that question? Or omissions?
Because it's, frankly, just because it's not in the two so-called oldest and best. Even though it's in, you know, a host of other witnesses to the text. Okay? In the next section, Vance identifies another category or congruency between the Reams New Testament and the King James. Please note that I have reproduced Vance's lengthy list as it appears in his book. Quote, "And it is not just entire verses that are omitted by modern versions. Many clauses, phrases, and individual words are also omitted. What follows is the text of all the verses in the New Testament of the Authorized Version that has significant omissions in most modern versions, but not where? But not in the Reams. The words in bold indicate what is omitted." Now, from page 11 here to page 24, there are 170 verses in this list. We obviously do not have time to look at all 170 of them. But in all 170 of these verses, the Reams agrees with the King James against modern versions in the words, phrases, and clauses that the modern versions are omitting. You with me? So we can skip now. We're not going to. So that's why I gave you all this data. So go to page 24.
The Reams has these extra phrases that the modern consider not from the original. Is there a source that they've gotten from originally, or is there something that the modern's not considering as original? Because they didn't make it out of whole cloth, I don't think.
So what we're forced to conclude here is that in these places, the traditional Greek and the Vulgate, do they agree with each other about what the reading should be? Yes, they do. But the two streams, says the Vulgate, is terrible, evil, and bad. And the Reims is terrible, evil, and what? Bad. But when you look at the textual data, is there more confluence between a King James and a Reims than there is between a King James and a modern version? So it's absolutely nonsensical then to just throw the Reims in the corrupt stream when in a ton of places where you can objectively analyze textual data, the King James agrees with what? The Reims over and against the critical text in modern versions. Okay? Look at bottom page 24. So after this list of 170 verses, modern Roman Catholic Bibles generally follow other modern versions when it comes to omissions. So if you pick up any of the following Bibles, this would include not just Catholic editions of the ESV, GNB, NLT, RSV, or NRSV, but also Roman Catholic Bibles like the Jerusalem Bible, the New American Bible, the New Jerusalem Bible, the New Revised American Bible, the New American Bible Revised Edition, and the Revised New Jerusalem Bible. Okay? So if you pick up a Catholic edition, will a modern Catholic edition omit all the words and phrases so that they agree with a modern version when the Reims had all the words, phrases, and clauses in it and agreed with the King James? You with me? A third category, Dr. Vance discusses instances where it could be argued that modern versions differ substantively from the King James on account of their underlying Greek texts, or at least the translational decisions. Yet in these instances, the Reims reads, as does the King James Bible, in contradistinction to modern versions. Once again, I have followed the formatting of Vance in the following citation. But it is not just omissions that are found in modern versions, but not in the authorized version and the Reims. What follows is the text of all the verses in the New Testament of the authorized version that have significant differences in wording from modern versions, but not the Reims. Okay? So again, in all these instances, the Reims agrees with who? King James. Because of differences in their underlying Greek texts, the words in bold type indicating what reads differently. Okay? So let's just look at a few examples here. We don't have time to read all these again. Okay? I'm pressed for time. I need to finish this. And again, I've given you more than we could possibly go through because I know that all of you are just avid readers and you're going to read all this stuff. Matthew 5:47, King James. And if ye salute your brother only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans do so? Or do not even the publicans so? The Reims has what? Publicans. Most modern versions read what? Who? Could you argue that's substantive?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So why is it different in the King James from a modern version? Because the underlying Greek text is different. But yet, the Reims agrees with who? The King James. What about this one? Matthew 24:42. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. Read says what? Hour. Most modern versions read day. Is that different? Based upon the prophecy of Daniel's 70th week, could somebody living in the tribulation figure out pretty close what day the Lord might return at His second coming? Therefore, you have the statement what? Hour versus what? Day. There's a whole bunch here. In Romans 14:10, modern versions say judgment seat of God. The Reims and the King James say judgment seat of Christ. You can look at that. I need to move on for the sake of time. You guys can look at, there's 16 verses in that list. Okay? So, painting a complete picture dictates that we comment on places where the Reims New Testament diverges from the King James and thereby reads similarly to modern versions. Okay, so there are some examples of this where the Reims agrees with a modern version. All right. At the end of chapter 4, Dr. Vance states, even though historians of the English Bible have made pronouncements about the reliance of the King James translators on the Reims New Testament, they nevertheless still point out the concord between the New Testament of the Revised Version of 1881 and the Reims New Testament when it comes to omissions and other diversions from the Authorized Version. Vance then cites Andrew Edgar's 1889 publication, The Bibles of England, as a case in point, but then fails to provide any textual examples. So I think he's really lacking in that sense, Vance is, that he doesn't give any examples. He just quotes this guy and moves on. So I found Edgar and looked it up. On page 259 and 260, Edgar states the following in part, quote, considering the strain of the foregoing remarks and the vehemence with which the Reims Testament has been decried by Protestants as a corruption of the Word of God, the reader will perhaps be scarcely prepared to hear now that a large number of its particular readings and renderings have been confirmed and adopted by the framers of the Revised New Testament, 1881. This fact, which may be easily verified, is a remarkable testimony to the intrinsic value of the Latin Vulgate as a faithful representation of the most ancient and approved manuscripts of the original Greek Testament. It is well known that many words, clauses, and sentences which are found in the Authorized Version of the New Testament are omitted in the Revised. And it is very instructive fact that now a few of the passages so excluded from the Revised Testament are wanting in the Reims also. Of this it will suffice to mention. So we've got one here in Matthew 6, verse 13. The end of the Lord's Prayer, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Missing from the Reims, missing from the Revised Version. Next one, Matthew 20, 22. And be baptized with the baptism that I baptized with. Missing from the Reims, missing from modern versions. Mark chapter 6, verse 11. Verily I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Missing in the Reims, missing in modern versions. But if it be of works, then it is no more grace. Otherwise work is no more work. Romans chapter 11, verse 6. Missing from the Reims, missing from modern versions. Okay? Look at the next bit. In addition to the four examples provided by Edgar, of confluence between the Reims New Testament and the Revised Version of 1881, please note the following additional examples. These examples hold true in modern versions, such as the NIV or ESV. One would be Matthew chapter 5, verse 22. But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother, they omit without a cause. The King James has the phrase without a cause. Okay, now that to me that's an important clause because you come later on in the Bible and Jesus is what?
Angry.
So again, don't tell me that none of this impacts any doctrine. Okay, Mark chapter 2 verse 1, as is written in Isaiah the prophet. The King James says, as is written in the prophets. Because the quote is from Malachi and Isaiah in verses 2 and 3 of Mark 1. And then Colossians 1:14, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. The Reims and the modern versions leave out the phrase what?
Through
his blood. Okay. Now, but we need to think about this. I have given you 18. We've looked at 18 passages that are in the Reims and the King James that are missing from modern versions. Okay. We looked at I gave you a list of 170 verses containing words, phrases, and clauses that are in a King James and that are in a Reims that are missing from modern versions. We looked at another 16 verses in this list We didn't read all of them, but they're in the list for you to look at, of wording differences between the King James and a modern version, where the King James agrees with the Reams against modern versions. That is 194 instances of confluence or agreement between the King James and the Reams. And I've given you seven that I know of. I'm not saying that my seven is exhaustive, okay, of places where the Reams agrees with the modern version against the King James. But all told, is there far more confluence between a Reams and a King James than there is between an NIV and a King James? You following me? So we need to conclude this, and this is really, really important that we do this. So, what can we conclude then from the evidence presented in this lesson? Number one, the King James translators were aware of and influenced by the Reams New Testament when conducting their work between 1604 and 1611. This is evidenced by the following. Number one, the preface, the readers to the translator. Number two, the notes of John Boyce. And number three, the word choices of the translators. Okay? Second takeaway. Textually, despite its Vulgate textual basis, the Reams New Testament has more confluence with the King James Bible than it does with the critical text and modern versions in terms of the vast majority of its readings. We looked at 194 instances where the King James and the Reams agree about words, phrases, and clauses and entire verses over against the critical text and modern versions. Is everybody with me? Page 29. The Reams, some spacing differences here on the internet. The Reams New Testament does contain some non-traditional readings that agree with the critical text and modern versions. So does everybody see how we're acknowledging that? But in the vast majority of the instances, does the Reams agree with the King James? Next takeaway. Like the Latin Vulgate, the Reams New Testament is a mixed text, driving with wheels on the road and the shoulder of Transmission Turnpike. You remember my Transmission Turnpike illustration? We had the Fords, the found on the road dead manuscripts that were left for dead by the body of Christ. Then we had those that were squarely on the road, and then we had ones that were riding down the margin with mixed readings, some pure, some not, remember? So the Vulgate and the Reams are mixed texts. Next takeaway. Placing the Reams New Testament in the corrupt stream of transmission as though it is wholly disconnected from the King James Bible is dishonest, misleading, and not based upon a textual examination or evaluation of the facts. Rather, it is based exclusively on anti-Catholic bias on the part of fundamentalists, and the false dichotomy of the two streams of Bible's paradigm of transmission. Is everybody with that? See, you guys have been taught well. Next takeaway. A balanced and honest assessment of the Reams New Testament does not hurt the pro-King James position. It helps it. And now everyone is freaking out in virtual land. Why? It aids it by highlighting how aberrant the publication of the modern critical text was / is from anything that came before it. No member of the body of Christ had ever seen such a text, much less used one, until it was created by Westcott and Hort in the 19th century. Consequently, the critical text fails on all three points to meet the biblical standard of preservation. Number one, it is not attested in a multiplicity of copies. Number two, it was not available and accessible to the believing church throughout the dispensation of grace. And number three, it was not in use by the believing church because it represents a form of the text that was not even known to exist before 1881. Now, is everybody following me? Folks, the modern critical text and the modern versions that come from the critical text are so like anything that ever existed in church history before 1881, Catholic or Protestant. So the Rheims New Testament, when properly understood, helps underscore the recent novelty of the modern critical text as a form of the text that no professing Christian, whether Catholic or Protestant, had ever seen, much less used, for the first 1900 years of church history. But now they want to tell us that that's the original text. You following this? Yet the canons of modern so-called neutral textual criticism wants Bible-believing Christians in the 21st century to believe that they have recovered and reconstructed the text. And the text that they are offering is unlike anything that any believing person throughout the entire history of the dispensation of grace before the latter portion of the 19th century had ever seen a day in their life, much less ever one, used. So instead of adopting dichotomous thinking about the two streams, when we evaluate the Rheims Bible textually, factually, objectively, what we realize is the Rheims does not hurt the King James position. It helps it because it helps accent how truly out of off the wall the modern critical text is, in that it represents a form of the text that no one had ever seen until they created it. You following that? Now, if you're looking at the time, we are way past time, and I gotta quit. Okay? Because, see, you're all so riveted by this that you didn't even realize we were nearly 10 minutes late. Okay? You all agreement with that statement, right? No. Okay. So, I have to stop. We don't have time to take questions. If you want to stick around and ask a question while we pack up, by all means.